Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, happy new week here on City of Champions Radio. I'm your host, Matt Geica. We thank you for tuning in, and we thank Blog Talk Radio for providing the platform. As always, another exciting week in Pittsburgh sports is in the books. In addition to the Pirates heating up, we had an enormous amount of excitement down the south side for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds soccer team. We've got both teams covered there. We've got your Steelers coverage from Harvard Ronson, writing some great historical pieces on the all-time best players at each position. He'll continue that throughout the summer. And we do have your latest Penguins news, too, as the NHL draft approaches. And then after that, free agency. That'll all be in the next 4 or 5 weeks. So much to come. It's all at cityofchampionsports.com. A name that you have seen on City of Champions in the past is my featured guest on today's edition of COC Radio. His name is Zach Weiss, and if you haven't seen him on our site that much lately, that's because he's rather busy in his other gig with Pittsburgh Sporting News at pittsburghsportingnews.com. Zach is the Pirates beat reporter, so he has been there for each and every home game at PNC Park and also writing up some recaps for the road games, too. He joins me on the line right now. Zach, how are things today?
Can't complain, Matt. It's a good day. Unfortunately, it's a West Coast game tonight, so it'll be about another 2 a.m. of bedtime. It's nothing I don't mind.
Yes, adjust your schedules accordingly. Always tough when the Pirates go out west, but hey, you call that a first world problem for sure. And when the Pirates are playing as well as they have lately, I think there's a good chance that it ends up being an entertaining game at the very least, if not a victory. As Gerrit Cole goes tonight, the Bucks continue that West Coast swing, as Zach alluded to. After a four-game split at San Diego, the Pirates are in San Francisco tonight to face the defending World Series champion, San Francisco Giants. But more on the Pirates and this ongoing up-and-down 2015 season in just a bit. For now, Zach, I want to ask you, first of all, how's the gig going? As I mentioned, your first year on the beat for Pittsburgh Sporting News. How has having the press access changed your perspective on the franchise and its coaches and its players?
Well, it's very, very different seeing things from a fan aspect versus a player aspect, versus a media aspect, excuse me. As a media member, you kind of get to see more of the routine. You kind of figure out who's more approachable and who are the guys that are going to give you maybe the good quotes or more likely to give you the information that you're looking for. And there are definitely guys that are on a day-in, day-out basis sought after by the media and are required to fill more media obligations than, say, other players. And it's interesting to see how that goes along. And I'd say the first couple days or so were really an adjustment process to try to figure out and feel things out. But really after that, I've really tried to go guns blazing. I've tried to bring something that no one else brings on a daily basis. I try to approach features a different way than maybe the average person would approach features. So it's been kind of a fuel prospect. It's kind of been just kind of trying to find the right balance to turn the switch, but yeah, I always love a good challenge, and I think this beat provides a challenge, and this is really, on a personal note, something that I've really wanted for a couple years, and now I finally feel like I have the opportunity, and now it's really up to me to take the bull by the horns, and hopefully I feel like I've done that so far.
I feel like you have too. I have to say the features have been great. As you mentioned, it's kind of difficult with a team as well covered as the Pirates are these days to find the different angle, find the unique perspective for a story, but I think you've done that so far. And, well, with 162 games, there's definitely plenty of opportunity to try some new things on a day-to-day basis. I particularly liked, I think it was early in the season, you wrote something about the Pirates base running. It was after a win in which the Pirates created some runs on the base paths, and you talked to Rick Sofield, who I think is very entertaining. I always love watching him, whether it be on the field or on some of those inside Pirate baseball specials on Root Sports. You interviewed him. You don't get to see his quotes in print anywhere that often, so I was happy to see you take up that angle. But you mentioned some of the players, like your Andrew McCutchins, your Neil Walkers, right now, Gerrit Cole, A.J. Burnett, those are the guys you see a lot in front of the camera or being interviewed before and after games. But are there any other guys that provide good quotes, good insight that you've discovered so far this season that go beyond the usual athlete speak, the cliches that you always hear?
A couple that really stick out in my mind, Jared Hughes is a very, very approachable individual. If you need a couple minutes, he's more than willing to give you a couple minutes. He's a very, very intelligent guy, whether it's just life talk, whether it's pirate talk, whatever the topic may be. Jared Hughes is a very, very reliable source. And another one is Chris Stewart. And I think people that read my feature on Chris Stewart maybe get that glimpse of that. He gave, I feel, very, very intelligent answers, very, very attention-grabbing answers, where he, not in a bad way to reflect bad attention on himself, but show that he pays attention to detail, something I think you expect from a catcher. But I think a lot of people see that right now Chris Stewart's the backup, and I think a lot of people do still feel that, hey, maybe Tony Sanchez should be up there, not him, because he provides the power, he had a good spring training, and he is improving on defense. But don't overlook Chris Stewart. Offensively, he's probably had his best two seasons in the majors. Defensively, he's really sound, and a lot of people think that he's Gerrit Cole's personal catcher this season, which is a perfect segue since both are in a lineup tonight. But Chris Stewart really goes above and beyond every time he is asked to be interviewed. He gives a lot of intelligent answers as well.
It seems to be that catchers are usually like that because they have to have their heads in the game at every moment, and you see plenty of catchers become managers. Just looking at the current major leagues, you have Mike Socha, Brad Ausmus, et cetera, et cetera. That position tends to lend itself to analysis and maybe wanting to stay in the game because you're almost a manager on the field. So that answer of Chris Stewart doesn't surprise me. When you look at this season on the whole, Zach, what word, what adjective, or what phrase would you use to describe it? Because this team came into 2015 with high expectations, higher expectations, I think, than the franchise has faced in the past two decades plus, ever since the early 90s in that run of division championships. And they didn't appear to handle it very well early on, very inconsistent. But now, even though they dropped two out of three to finish that series in San Diego, they've still won 8 of 10 overall. And they're above 500. They're back in that playoff chase. What changed over the last couple of weeks from where this team was early on this season?
Well, the proper adjective to answer the first question is probably, and realistically, roller coaster. I think expectations for a team naturally go up when a team shows that it can perform not just one season, but in the Pirates' case, multiple seasons. And I know a lot of fans have had their expectations of the team, and the expectations for just about two decades have been below par, disappointing, so to speak. So to have these last couple of seasons go the way they have, it's really rejuvenated the Pirates fan base. Maybe those fans that weren't coming to the ballpark before are coming back again, and that makes it a little bit more frustrating. The expectations are higher, and they're matching kind of what the other two professional sports teams that many people go to, the Steelers, the Penguins. Those expectations are pretty much right there at this point. I mean, you have experts such as Buster Olney predict the Pirates to do as well as he predicted them to do. That was pretty documented. So to see them really as disappointing in the sense of a lot of fans going up and going down, where they're winning a lot, then they're losing a lot, and there just doesn't seem to be a middle ground, it's a very frustrating process for the fans. But I think the players are trying to figure a lot of things out. You might have had some players that are pressing and really felt like they were trying to take too much onto themselves. I think there are a few players that would say that they felt that way. And I think at least in West Coast, these last few trips, I mean, you sweep the Mets, who are right there in the wild card hunt. They're a really exceptional team this season. A lot of people didn't think the Mets would do that well this season. A lot of people didn't think the Twins would do that well this season. But right around this past homestand, I think the Pirates are starting to find that second gear. They're starting to be consistent, and that's what it is. The Pirates have gotten one or the other with pitching or offense, but they haven't been able to get both. And that's something that's really starting to show. They're starting to become more consistent, for the most part, in finding that. You've seen Jung Ho Gung acclimate to the American surroundings, and really lately what you've seen is what I think a lot of the Pirates executives and front office expected from him when he was signed for the contract he was. He didn't come with much fanfare in terms of there weren't really many other teams publicly known that were bidding for him, but you see guys like him start to bring it. Josh Harrison, he might have tried to do too much with trying to live up to that contract extension he got in the first series of the season. I think he's settling in, he's realizing what's expected, and he's not pressing as much. You see Andrew McCutchen, was he injured, was he not? We won't know 100% what the full story was. What we do know is he came behind in spring training, admittedly his own words, And I think now he's starting to feel comfortable. He's in that gear, and he's a notoriously slow starter. So now that the months are going to get hotter, I mean, I think you'll see the same with McCutchen. I mean, you can really go up and down the line as how everybody's really made improvements. But this is a team effort, and I think the team improving collectively is what's led to the majority of that West Coast trip.
It does feel like a wave with the Pirates' offense and also the pitching, which leading up to that Jeff Locke start last night in which he gave up 6 earned runs, 7 runs overall to the Padres. The starting rotation had just been spectacular for about 2 weeks, and that led the charge. That helped the Pirates get back into that playoff race. And right now, as of today, 26-24 through 50 games after being 4 games below 500 just as recently as 10 days ago. So the progress has been made, and still a lot of work to do, though, overcoming another sluggish start for the second consecutive year. You brought up Jung Ho Kang, and that's definitely a topic of conversation, and maybe his season mirrors the Pirates because he wasn't getting much playing time early on, I think intentionally so by the Bucks, but with Jordy Mercer slumping early on, Josh Harrison as well, you had no choice. I think Clint Hurdle had no choice but to play Kang and to give him a shot, and with the additional playing time, not to the extreme, he's still getting his days of rest, but with that additional playing time, he is producing more and more, and culminated by that long home run at San Diego in front of a nationally televised audience back home in South Korea that had to be a real thrill for him. What's it been like interacting with him and his interpreter, H.K. Kim, in the Pirates clubhouse? It's got to be a different dynamic, and I'm sure it was difficult for him, but at the same time, he's a 27-year-old veteran pro, so it's not exactly a situation where he's a true rookie coming in either.
No, you're right about that, Matt, and the experiences with HK or Kim and Jung Ho Kang are about what I expected. I remember last year when I covered the Memorial. I mean, the Memorial, which is this week again, which we'll talk about later. The winner last year was Hideki Matsuyama, and Hideki Matsuyama is not from America. Hideki Matsuyama, in fact, is from Japan, so there is an interpreter in that sense. And during the in rounds, the answers were rather short, but during the final round when he won, the answers had a little bit more depth. And I think that comes with the comfort level of speaking to the media. And I think the same thing can really hold true for Jung Ho Kang. I mean, there have been times where maybe things have been lost in translation where the answers won't be as long or in depth as maybe some of the writers were looking at. But at the same sense, he's for the most part there to answer questions. Otherwise, they'll coordinate something where it's a time that he's closer, where he's more available. But Kang has been much more sought after by a lot of the media, and he's really lived up to the expectation there of fulfilling his end of the bargain. And he knows that that's part of what it means to be an athlete. And I think he's much more comfortable in speaking with the media, but he's also much more comfortable on the diamond, which is something that I think is translated. It's shown he has admitted that he really enjoys playing in front of the big crowds. And if the Pirates continue the streak they had coming in with the homestand, with the Mets sweep, with the Marlins series and everything there, then I think that it'll be very good as long as he continues to hold up his end of the bargain. I think he's more comfortable. Will he be completely comfortable? That's up for interpretation, but his English is getting better. I've heard some English. It's not just thank you anymore. The English is slowly but steadily improving, and he's working very, very hard at it. So I think it's a very, very good process for Jung Ho Kang, but it's also a very interesting process for the media to find out how he is working and improving, not just on the field, but off the field in a lot of aspects as well.
There is a novelty aspect with Kang being the first position player to come over from South Korea, and after being a veteran in that league, I should say, and not being developed in the American minor leagues, this is a new thing for MLB, and so that is, I think, part of the reason for the curiosity that pops up among media and fans. It's been intriguing to watch that develop over the course of the opening 2 months, and if Kang continues to play like he has, there's no reason to believe that he won't be getting more and more opportunities to impress Clint Hurdle and the rest of his teammates. And speaking of Hurdle, he's a guy who seems like would be a lot of fun interacting with on a day-to-day basis. He always has those Hurdleisms, if you will, and different ways of putting mundane things that I think tend to liven up the discussion, whether it be with the media or with the players. I'm sure that's also an area in which he uses his rhetorical powers to try to get through to them in a sport that can be very repetitive, very mundane through 6 months playing almost every day. What are your impressions of Clint Hurdle? And I know you don't get to see him address the team directly, but why do you think he has been such a popular figure amongst players and, you know, not just the fans, but with the team? Because that is really what's important in the end.
I think that the team, it's just a buy-in factor. The team just buys in. Hurdle says the right things to the team, and there's just a buy-in factor. And I think it's really as simple as that. When you look at other sports, you look at basketball, maybe you look at hockey, for example, a team will do well, and if there's a drop-off, a lot of times instantly coaches are on the hot seat. They're expected to be fired, or there's expected to be maybe some kind of change to be made in the near future. I mean, you saw in Miami, there was a paranoia factor once Dan Jennings was hired. You saw a change in the third base coach position. There's been things that have changed dramatically over there this whole season when the Marlins were expected to be contenders and really have not lived up to that billing thus far. You saw the Pirates have had their inconsistencies, but the players still buy into Hurdle. There's no let-up. They're playing every single inning. They're playing every single out. There's no give-up factor. Neil Huntington has backed them up thick and thin this season when even during the bad times, there were some fans that were starting to murmur for Hurdle's head. So there's a buy-in factor with the players. There's a buy-in factor with management. Clint Hurdle is not going anywhere anytime soon. Those are the facts. There's an 100% buy-in factor in that clubhouse between Hurdle and the front office executives. Really, that's really what it comes down to.
It's fun to hear you say buy-in, because that has been, I think, a favorite phrase of Clint Hurdle this year. He has been using that a lot, and maybe it leads you to believe that there wasn't so much of that early on this season, but players are looking engaged, much more engaged lately, and I always hesitate to harp on effort and try to speculate on how engaged players are and how into things that the guys are, how well they are preparing. But it seems to have been a definite factor in their poor start and their recent turnaround. So that is something to keep an eye on as we move forward. You mentioned routines, Zach, and how you were able to see players get ready for games. Is there anything surprising or anything that's stood out to you, whether it be on an individual basis or with the team, regarding how baseball players get ready to go about their business? I mentioned it's a repetitive sport. It is a grinding sport. It can be quite grueling, especially if you're someone like Andrew McCutchen or Neil Walker, playing nearly 160 games a year. Starling Marte is in that category now, an everyday player for the most part. What do these guys do, and what stands out to you about how they get ready to get their bodies and minds in shape to play Major League Baseball?
I'm not sure there's really much that surprises me, to be honest with you, because when I was there as a fan, I mean, I saw a decent amount of what it is. I mean, they're constantly throwing, they're working on me. And I think if you read again the Chris Stewart feature that I mentioned earlier in the podcast here, I think that gives you a good glimpse, a good idea of what a lot of the players are going through. And the reason why I did that feature was that Clint Hurdle was talking about his work ethic and how he's really bought into a work ethic. And when you hear Chris Stewart's work ethic, I think that answer took a minute alone in my recording if I go back and listen to it. So that just goes to show you really how dedicated he is and really how much dedication you have to have as a major leaguer. And it's tough. I mean, a lot of fans have to consider that it is a 162-game season, and that's just if you don't make the playoffs. There's still days off where players may or may not either stay fresh or at least use it as a maintenance day where they can just unwind and do anything other than baseball. On days where Chris Stewart starts, he might have 50 minutes before the game where he's not baseball-oriented and he's on his iPad. I mean, that's the kind of dedication that it shows to be a major leaguer. And when you criticize a player for making one mistake, it feels like such a big deal. But when baseball is really a game of inches, I mean, you miss a pitch by half an inch, it might just get popped up to the shortstop. I mean, those kind of small details, I mean, you kind of have more of an appreciation for that on the beat and more of an understanding. And when you're a fan, I mean, a lot of things I think are expected immediately. These guys are professionals. They make it every single day. But when you're a player, it's the pressure is on the routine. It's not necessarily on performing. It's only one game. As much as fans don't like to hear that, I mean, it is only one game. It's just putting in the work and watching film, taking breaks when you need to, maybe a hot tub time or something like that. That's your break. Other than that, you're hitting, you're taking live batting practice, You're doing the pitching machine, you're doing a bullpen session, you're catching and throwing on the field, you're stretching with Kiyoshi Mimosa and the training staff. It's just ongoing. You have a chance to breathe, to eat, to shower, and to get in the hot tub. And other than that, you're pretty much nonstop. You get there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then you're going straight through 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock. It's nonstop, and for 162 games, assuming you're healthy, it's a very, very tough ask.
It's a tough ask for the players, and I think that's why the Pirates, and I know that's why the Pirates have been trying to get an edge in terms of keeping players healthy, keeping them on the field. They have been delving into new kinds of technology, and stories like that continue to emerge, and maybe an opportunity for the Pirates, who have been very good at finding those small edges in the last couple of seasons, as described in Travis Sawchuk's new book, the Tribune Review beat reporter Big Data Baseball. He has described that, and we've seen stories from guys like our very own Zach Weiss here on the podcast, digging deeper into how the Pirates continue to look for that competitive advantage no matter where it may pop up. I brought up Rick Sofield earlier, the third base coach, and I know there are so many people behind the scenes, athletic trainers, therapists, Gilberto Andrade out in the bullpen, a guy that you know pretty well. Could you just describe the number of support staff it takes to keep a major league team up and running, and how you have seen them go about their business this year?
Well, just to start with Sofield, since he's the first guy you mentioned, a lot of people think he and Nick Leyva are just the base coaches. That is definitely not the case. Sofield is behind the scenes. He's in charge of base running. He's in charge of outfield. Leyva is in charge of infield. Really, a lot of the infield depth adjustments have not been a lot of the guys mentioned in Travis Sawchuk's book. It's not just been those guys, but Leyva's been doing a lot of the adjustments as well. He's positioning the guys in the infield. So when you see all those double plays, it's the advanced scouting. It's also Leyva as well. So you have to consider that. You have to consider, I think this entire season so far, I think Sofield has made one really bad, maybe two really bad waves of third base, one of which is arguably the send of Lombardozzi that Frank Horst threw him out, but you really have to send him in that situation. Sofield, I think, has been a little bit more aggressive than Leyva has as a third base coach. Maybe that's to some fans' liking, but he knows when to pull the brakes. The throw I detailed with the Braun throw in that feature that you mentioned earlier, that was a perfect time to throw the bait, you know, to throw that in. But I think so far, I mean, there's a lot of expectations on them, and behind the scenes, they're throwing batting practice every day. They're catching. Herbie Andrade's catching bullpen sessions. He's out on the field. Cletus Rojas, the bullpen coach, is catching all kinds of pitching sessions as well. They're providing behind the scenes. Jeff Lindsay is the backup. He's the assistant hitting coach, rather. Excuse me. I mean, he's there all the time. Jeff Branson. Those two really have, I think, been a really, really good team, and they don't get a lot of recognition as well. I mean, you see the product on the field, but a lot of it is the players themselves, but a lot of it is the coaching, doing the advanced scouting, using the reports, knowing hot and cold zones, knowing where a pitcher's likely to pitch and what their tendencies are. There is more access to film. There is more access to all that kind of information than there ever has been before. And sometimes it's a detriment, but a lot of times it's a benefit. Shifting has been constantly been talked about. And I think the Houston Astros might be the only team that shift more than the Pirates, but that's because of all the scouting, and a lot of made of it. I mean, there was a shift in Korea where a guy shifted right behind the catcher. So, I mean, shifting is such a huge part of the game anymore. Advanced scouting really plays a lot of part of it. And a lot of the guys I mentioned, plus more that are unnamed and unfortunately so for time purposes, among other things, these guys go about it just as hard as these players do for more time than players do. They arrive at the crack of dawn and they do the same thing the players do. They put in a full day. So a lot of those efforts are to be commended, and it's a lot, oftentimes, why you see the product on the field that you do. The game has changed for better or for worse. I mean, that's up for the person you to decide, but that's where the game's going, and they have to put the time in to make sure they stay ahead of the curve, and really the Pirates arguably have done that.
Terrific insight and observations there from Zach Weiss, Pirates beat reporter this season for PittsburghSportingNews.com, and it does take a village to run a Major League Baseball team these days. That much is clear from what you just told us and what we've seen in other media venues and what you can just see from showing up early for batting practice, for instance, at PNC Park. So we'll keep track of the Pirates as they try to chase down the Cubs and the Cardinals in the NL Central, back in position at least to make a run at a third consecutive playoff berth. But now for the last 5 minutes here, Zach, I've got a selection of questions, a smorgasbord, if you will, of topics from the world of sports, some rapid fire perhaps here to close out the show. Let's talk some golf as you are headed down to capital of the state of Ohio, Columbus, Dublin, in fact, to be particular, for the Memorial Tournament, and then U.S. Open qualifying the day after. The Memorial really getting off the ground this week and with some practice rounds and then Thursday's opening round. But when you look at the landscape of golf right now, you've got the big three, I guess. We've talked about the big three well in the past for golf, the glory days that many people believe them to be, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player. But now you have Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and perhaps after that win at the Players' Championship that went to a playoff, Ricky Fowler. Which of those three guys do you think owns the rest of the golf season on the PGA Tour?
It depends on how much Rory McIlroy plays. If Rory McIlroy plays, McIlroy's going to win. I think the adjustment into the European Tour schedule was maybe a negative for McIlroy, but Spieth is on the tour regularly, and Spieth plays a lot of the events, both of the major events and some of the more lesser tournaments, and a lot of that's because these tournaments have given him his first chance where he was able to make his run to the 2013 President's Cup team. So of the big three, I think Fowler is the most consistent in terms of majors, but he's also the most unproven in that he hasn't won tournaments at the rate that the other two have. Spieth has just won the Masters. He really went in that role from the off season heading into the beginning of the season, but until Rory McIlroy is dethroned to number one, the default answer has to be McIlroy.
Moving on to the world of basketball, staying in the Buckeye State, actually, the Cleveland Cavaliers are in the NBA Finals once again with LeBron coming back to town. The hometown boy will go up against Steph Curry, the phenomenon from the Golden State Warriors. And if you had to pick a team to be the team of the season in the NBA, I think it would be Golden State, coached by Steve Kerr, of course. And they have set the league on fire all season long, so only fitting that they face off against LeBron James and the Cavs here in the finals, which will begin on Thursday. Who you got in this one, Zach, and give us a quick reason why.
Comes down to the depth. I think that the Warriors have more depth. It depends on the health of Klay Thompson. My answer really hinges on how healthy he is from his concussion. The depth goes with the Warriors. The best player on the court right now is the Cavaliers. Give me the Warriors in seven, but if Klay Thompson's not healthy, then switch it to Cavs in seven.
We'll take that hedge. That's okay. No problem with waiting on that. And, well, the other championship series ready to get going. Chicago Blackhawks, Tampa Bay Lightning. A bit of age versus youth, although still the stars for the Chicago Blackhawks are in their late 20s, so it's not like they're exactly over the hill. But a compelling story, some new faces, some old faces in the NHL's championship series. How have you seen, or how do you see, this one playing out? Just because of, with Tampa, it's a whole new team, their first trip to the Stanley Cup Final in more than a decade.
Well, it is their first trip in over a decade, and you have to look at the fact that their head coach is in his second season. He's really unproven in terms of years, and that can be an advantage, that can be a disadvantage. Do you go with the age and the experience? Do you go with the youth? I'm going to go with the age just because I feel like I know more about what the Blackhawks will do than the Lightning. And that could be, again, that could be for the better or for the worse. But are the Lightnings ready for the big stage yet? Not sure. I'll take Blackhawks in six.
Yeah, you surprised me there. I thought you were going against your analysis. But I'll take the Blackhawks, too. I think they defend a little bit better than Tampa, although very impressive stuff from the Lightning, who can score with the best of them, highest scoring team in the NHL, but then shutting down the Rangers in wins at Madison Square Garden in games 5 and 7 to win the Eastern Conference. And as I mentioned, their first appearance in the title series since 2004, when they won it all against the Flames for the Blackhawks. It is yet another championship round berth, their third over the past 6 years, and they've already won a couple of cups and going for number three this spring. Last thing before we go, you almost have to talk about it with the NFL, Zach. The New England Patriots once again punished Tom Brady under the spotlight, and it shines harshly on him and his involvement with the deflation of some footballs during the AFC playoffs. Roger Goodell's four-game suspension, too harsh, too lenient, or was that right on the money?
I did say to a lot of people that I felt that his suspension would be very, very similar to that Michael Vick received, and I think that that's justified. As much as Goodell's been really inconsistent in a sense, I've heard before he's been his own judge and jury. I don't like him as a commissioner, frankly. I don't think he's consistent enough in his rulings, and his reasons are not enough to back up what he's done. I think that the suspension is justified. I think the Patriots will be okay. I think Garofalo will do the job at quarterback, but I don't think this – for those who think that this is going to tarnish Brady's legacy, I hope that's not the case. Brady still is a very good quarterback. Regulations, deflations or not, I think that Brady's a very gifted quarterback, and people finally were able to find something wrong with Brady because he has had a squeaky clean image. So I hope that Brady comes back strong for the game's sake. He's still a first-ballot Hall of Famer, not even close in my eyes. He just kind of got caught red-handed with the deflation mistake, and I know that it pleases a lot of people, but it doesn't take away from the legacy that Brady has, at least in my opinion.
I'm with you for the most part on that one, and I do wonder how many quarterbacks and how many teams were doing a similar thing and were not caught, but that's the world we live in right now. The New England Patriots are always going to be the team that's hunted, and with four Super Bowl championships in the last 15 years, you can understand why. Zach, it's been great catching up with you again to get you back on City of Champions Radio, and we look forward to not just your Pirates coverage continuing on throughout the summer, and we hope into October, another Bucktober perhaps on the way in Pittsburgh, but also your golf coverage headed down to the Memorial Jacks Tournament. That's always a great one with some of the world's best players always showing up, and then the U.S. Open qualifying and the U.S. Open coming up a little bit later this month. So a great time to be a sports fan. I always thought spring and summer were the best times, and you have two aspects of that covered. So we appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, sounds like a plan. And a quick side note, if anybody has not heard Matt's goal calls with the Riverhounds, you've been doing very, very great work for the Riverhounds, among other venues. So keep up the good work on your end as well, Matt.
Thanks. My voice has just recovered from Saturday night. I couldn't have done a show yesterday. My strength would not have been quite there, but it was a lot of fun, and I do appreciate that, Zach. Thank you very much for the kudos. It's easy to bring the energy when you have a 6-5 game, I'll put it that way, as we had on Saturday down at Highmark Stadium. For Zach Weiss of City of Champions and Pittsburgh Sporting News, this has been Matt Geica reminding you that when the radio fades, you know life's moving fast. Great to have you on City of Champions Radio. Stay tuned for another episode later in the week. Until then, please keep visiting City of Champions at cityofchampionsports.com.